a more slimmed down capital budget request of around $300,000.
Which is not to say you don't have the capital needs. You do. The request is just not including them because of other constraints. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters. Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet. Yes, in your browser, WFPR.FM. In the local, Franklin Mass FM radio dial. Yeah, the dial or the knobs or the push buttons. 102.9 is the number to preset. Here virtually today with our vice chair of the school committee, Dave Callahan. Dave, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. We got as at the time of this recording, 10 days before Christmas, and so we're getting, hopefully it won't be any last minute, kind of running out to get this toy or that toy. But I think we're in a pretty good position, and we had the one big school committee meeting of December. We kind of had a lot of information that we'll I know we'll try to do the best we can to kind of shrink it down to about 30 minutes. But we just had that one meeting in the month of December.
You packed a bunch in there, that's for sure. But yeah, we'll get there. And then you also, and it was interesting because I had unfortunately presumed, bad on me, that you wouldn't have gotten your subcommittees together yet to have a meeting before the break. So I scheduled another recording session. So I missed making the choice as to which one I was going to go to, either the capital budget subcommittee or the policy subcommittee. And I missed both. But you can also give us a teaser as to what the policy subcommittee did.
Yeah, I absolutely can because we're hitting the ground running with this term. And so we had during policy there was kind of two big discussion points. One of them is really just adding a new policy that we'll kind of see in January that was we had to kind of jump into to kind of get into compliance with some DESE stuff. And it's really just kind of about saying notifying in our 8th graders that all the different high school opportunities that they have. They got Franklin Public Schools. We got now some great career pathways at Franklin High, and so we got that option. But also obviously we got Tri-County and Norfolk Aggie. So that's just a new policy we had to work on to get us into compliance. The second one was that there was once after like the failed overrides, obviously a lot of folks saw a lot of fees increase. I know we've talked about the bus fees and the sports fees. Something else that increased was early childhood development center fee rate.
ECDC, correct. Yep.
And what we saw now, those folks, their fees dramatically went up by about, I think, like 23%. They had been stagnant for many years, so then they really kind of jumped up. But what we saw was as soon as those fees really skyrocketed, that the tuition enrollment numbers went down. And so we kind of had to balance out that in terms of, we still want to try to bring in as much revenue as possible. But obviously, as you kind of, you pull one lever, well, the other one starts to kind of go down. So we were working on that balancing act. And that's what a lot of that policy subcommittee meeting was about.
Yeah, and respectfully too, I know that's been a part of the public discussion, particularly around transportation, because when you had increased the fees for buses, clearly the ridership had dropped. You were able to drop it somewhat, but it still doesn't fully cover the cost, at least from a parent participation. The school district still pays a boatload of that cost. And yet there's still opportunity because there's what, a couple hundred students, if I recall correctly, who are eligible for a free bus and yet don't take it. And that may be an opportunity for the district as well to help alleviate some of the traffic issues by enforcing or at least encouraging more of those eligible students to use the bus, because then a bus can get through the traffic as opposed to what, 8 to 10 cars?
That's exactly it. And yeah, there was I think almost 200 students that would have received free transportation had they elected to do so. And I mean, so you're talking, somewhere between 100 to 150 cars kind of taken off the road because those folks are now kind of driving on in. So Hopefully more to come with that as we kind of develop the budget, but really try to get the message out there to, hey, folks, if you don't like waiting in line on Lincoln Street or Oak Street or Washington, we got this great bus that can get your kids to school, on time and safely, and hopefully at an affordable rate as well.
And since we're talking budget, we can segue because while the capital budget did have a subcommittee meeting, it was also coincidentally part of the regular full committee meeting, and you did approve the capital budget.
We did, yes. And this capital budget, it's much more slimmed down than what it has been in the past. Really by about $500,000. Typically we've requested and been approved for somewhere in the ballpark of about $800,000 annually through capital. And this year, really just kind of given the financial realities of Franklin, the superintendent, his office, and then the school committee went and approved a more slimmed down capital budget request of around $300,000.
Which is not to say you don't have the capital needs. You do. The request is just not including them because of other constraints.
That's exactly it. It would have, when we're going and we're having to make cuts after cuts after cuts, when we're kind of telling the public that we desperately needed, these overrides. We need this injection of cash into the total overall budget. And unfortunately, just we both know how it didn't pan out, and so we had to make more cuts to kind of turn around and say, all right, well, we actually need another 800,000, to a million in capital needs. It's just kind of tone deaf to the realities that Franklin's in right now. So the budget that was kind of presented, or the capital request, was for much more in reality, which hopefully is going to kind of be seen as it goes to FinCom, it goes to the town council, and gets approved, because there's definitely many more things that were left on the cutting room floor, but these are the absolute biggest priorities that were coming through.
So top priorities, you still have a long list of other reasonable requests, but under the circumstances, you just really slimmed it down this time around.
Exactly. And so and but it's a great document. It's still been spearheaded by a director of operations, Colin. And not only is he providing just great information and kind of direction, but also the way that the material is kind of presented. Like, I encourage everybody to check out the our website. I'm sure in the show notes as well, because it really he really breaks it down to say, well, here's historically, here's kind of where we came from, here's what got approved, here's the projects in the works, and then here's what we're looking to kind of do moving forward. And I think what they also did a great job of as well is showcasing all the different components around the town and how they all impact the schools as well. So they kind of talked about what the facilities capital request is and the technology capital request, and how it's, I mean, it's all one big ecosystem.
It is. And we'll deviate slightly because the FinCom Finance Committee met the next night, and the long-awaited technology deep dive, I think it was originally scheduled for the June meeting, which they didn't have a quorum for. July got missed. August, for some reason, it didn't happen. October got rescheduled. They finally had it. And certainly, I would encourage folks to go to the FinCom video. It's available. The audio is available on Franklin Matters, franklin.news. Bottom line is a teaser. In order to fully fund technology, and which includes capital, the licenses, and staffing, would be an additional 1.5 million. And part of the discussion was, technology these days, and certainly you've seen it through a number of the school committee presentations, it's hard to deliver education without some of the technical tools, i.e., the smart boards. Never mind the licenses for the Chromebooks, never mind this. MCAS is all test-based and on Chromebook-based, right? So it's almost impossible to, and I think they were making the akin to, well, you can't turn off the water. You can't turn off technology in order to deliver what you're doing.
Oh, it's absolutely true. I'll check that one out myself, because yeah, I gotta say, thankfully with Franklin TV, now everything is up online and on YouTube. We kind of saw that what happens when that system isn't in place or that town council meeting, and it's amazing service that you all do to be able to make it so we can kind of go back and watch these things. But you're right, this is just, it becomes a public utility now, an essential service to be able to have technology in the classrooms. It's not this something that, in the past couple of decades, well, it's a nice to have. Well, now it's a need in order to kind of provide educational services in 2025. Technology, and you can't just kind of continue to run on antiquated Chromebooks and outdated licenses.
No, not at all. So, more to come on that as we go through the full budget process, because then that'll certainly get talked about. Because technology technically lines up, although it's one of those funky departments. It lines up on the school side, but it really covers both, akin to facility lines up on the town side, but really covers both. So back to the school committee agenda, at least you recognize the volleyball team, which did something unique. They brought home a state championship.
We did, and it was fantastic. There's so many great accolades and accomplishments in the Franklin Public Schools with the students that we have here. And but so anytime when they kind of win like a state championship like we had, we always love the opportunity to have them come on in, get their pictures taken. They get recognized. They had these amazing jackets. I think it was
Yes.
Dr. Rogers that made them turn around and so for folks, if you see that picture online too, it was incredible. But yeah, it's just, I mean, this is years and years of practice and training and getting rides to all these different events to kind of culminate in the winning the state championship. And it was so incredibly proud of that entire team.
Yeah, they worked hard. They kept coming closer and closer, and they finally did it. It was not an easy thing because what? Newton North, I think, had already been there twice in a row. They were there a third time in a row, but they didn't win this time.
No.
Yeah. And those jackets. Yeah, I have to encourage that picture look. It's a classic. The young ladies are looking over their shoulder at the jackets. It's a good photo.
It is. And so they were, there was a bunch of great smiles. And so I really hope that they know how much it means to this entire town and community when you have like a sports team like this come back with that championship. It's incredible.
Yep. And then while you had gotten an update on the October 1 numbers, which for reference, if you're not aware to the others listeners, October 1 is always a key demarcation point, a milestone in terms of the data going to the state for enrollment. So while you got that earlier, you now got kind of a deeper dive, a little bit better look at truly, not just Franklin Public Schools, but Franklin student population and some of the enrollment trends, at least over, I think it was the last 5 years.
Yeah, and it was great because what they did a wonderful job of illustrating that raw data. And so it was kind of presented out to us pre at a prior meeting last term, and with just the numbers in a spreadsheet. But now we got they put together this two-pager that shows the trends. And really what the trends are showing is that more and more students are staying within the Franklin Public School system. I think some of the charter school numbers, it's like the lowest that it has been in quite some time. And so, and I think it's so important when they kind of like talk about this or showcase this. Nadia, one of the newer school committee members, had this great moment kind of talking about looking at it historically, looking at it before the charter school expansion until today. And you kind of recognize that when you look at the hard data, it doesn't align with some of the narratives that might have kind of been going out in the past. Some of the narratives about public, the enrollment numbers just, kind of sliding all the way down to nothing in a few years, or that everyone is looking to kind of go to the charter school versus some of the Franklin public schools. It's just not the case. That Lucas and his team have really worked hard to create this incredible public school system that we have. And now we have this, both the data, but really the illustrations to kind of showcase. Now, here's where it's at. Here's you can see that like enrollment numbers have really kind of for the most part plateaued, and that you don't have this exodus out of the Franklin Public School system, say, into the charter school system.
And I think one of the other emphasis is it enables us now, from a Franklin perspective, recognizing that parents have choices. So between charter or out of district, whether it's a parochial school or a private school, whatever, Franklin parents have choices. And yet, to your point, at least the numbers are now showing, and I think it was like 82, 83% or something in that 80 range, but there was a tight range within maybe 2%. Over the last 5 years, the numbers are staying within that range of Franklin students coming to Franklin Public Schools.
Yeah. And it's 'cause it's a great system. It's a great, I mean, I got, both of my kids are going all the way up through, and now I got, freshmen at high school, that, obviously we love the Franklin Public School system, but so do the vast majority of Franklin residents, as well. And again, nothing against any of the other schools that are out there either. I'm very excited to kind of see what Tri-County's, what their new building's going to look like in their school. And I would anticipate an uptick those first couple of years, because I'm sure there are going to be many families that are just as excited about the big new school that's just developed and what that might mean.
Sure.
But we have a great educational system here in Franklin, and parents and families agree as well.
Yeah, and while it's interesting that the Franklin population to Tri-County, I think it's between 110, 120 has been generally the range over the years. There may be an uptick of that too. I was disappointed that the state forced them only to maintain the current size capacity in terms of the 1,000 students, knowing that we need a lot more of those tech and trade students across the spectrum, whether electrical, plumbing, graphic design, nursing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The demographics show there's a need for it, and yet forcing them to maintain the same size, albeit obviously expensive, but the training is going to be needed. So anybody that goes there is going to get something that clearly is going to get used by all the rest of us when they come out.
Absolutely. No, and but it's yes, I got some friends that are already enrolled in Tri, and a few others that are kind of thinking about it. It's a great school system, but not the one that, as an elected official, I represent. So I'll kind of leave that to those folks to
Yes.
champion more.
Yep. There are Franklin representatives on the Tri-County School Committee. They at least come up and get a minimum update, at least during the budget process, because technically the school budget has three lines, Franklin, Tri-County, and Norfolk Aggie. So yeah. I try to do more, but it also takes, some of their assistance in regards to properly spreading the word on what Norfolk Aggie does and what Tri-County does. So, yeah, I don't want to misspeak for them by any means. I think that was kind of the key pieces. And then you went into an executive session, so we won't talk about that until that comes out. But yeah, that was.
I think what I'll also say too, because we had during, I think it might have come right around like the superintendent's update, but our school business administrator had kind of put out some just extra information about like Chapter 70. They were answering questions about hold harmless and
Yes.
revolving accounts,
Yes.
which was my colleagues were asking just spectacular questions, because there's so much confusion about, say, like revolving accounts was one that was coming up time
Yes.
and time again.
Right.
Because I know sometimes, folks will look, and if you kind of look at the data, you look at the budget books and you see how much money might be in, say, like some of the revolving accounts. Well, and just for quick primer, so that's, it's say like athletics has a revolving account. So families will kind of pay the fees for athletics. It kind of goes into this athletics revolving account, which effectively acts as a lockbox. People might look at that and say, well, there's all this money in all these different revolving accounts. Why don't we just use all of that money first before kind of like, using any other, from a normal operating budget plan of 300. And so that was, it was a lot of great questions. And John, the school business administrator, really kind of like, broke it down to say, well, legally, say like with athletics, any money that goes into the athletics revolving account, that lockbox, can only be spent on athletics.
Right. Yep, the buses, the uniforms, the coaches, the officials, has to be athletics related expenses.
Exactly. And so, and we've had years where the athletics line item had been entirely funded through the revolving account, but really like an overabundance, kind of like breaking the piggy bank. And even though there was money left over, we couldn't just kind of take that and then use it for a new classroom teacher. And because it just legally is not allowed. But then the other thing that like Jana had mentioned was that what we're looking into as they develop next year's budget is a lower reliance on the revolving accounts. And only because if you're constantly dipping into that savings account that that eventually that's going to run dry.
Yes.
And if all of a sudden if we're going and we're using say 100% of the like you mentioned with transportation, it's like a 60-40 split. If we wanted to charge families a true cost of riding the bus, it would be somewhere in the range of about like $1,200. And right now we charge them 387.
Right.
If we exclusively have the transportation be either all drain it all from the rainy day fund, there or from the revolving account, there'll be a time very shortly in just a couple of years where all of a sudden that revolving account will be brought down to zero. And now we're at a situation where we do have to charge families the full amount to ride the bus of, say, $1,200. And so we kind of talked about at the top of the recording, the as that rate increases, the ridership decreases. And it both kind of impacts revenue, but then it really impacts traffic. And so it's this kind of big balancing act. But so a lot of great questions about the revolving account, about hold harmless. You had commented wonderfully at the end of the meeting as well.
From my historical perspective, I added a couple of points there. Home harmless, when I had first started, OPEB, other post-employment benefits, was the big albatross. There was every single budget conversation. Townside primarily, because it didn't affect schools so much, except obviously what they would give you would be reflective of what they had available. But the town finally realized that they could use the Norfolk retirement funds, which were supposed to get fully funded sooner. And originally it was going to be 2030. Now apparently it's going to be about 2035. But they could still take those funds and put them to OPEB. So OPEB generally is still out there as a conversation. But it's no longer the albatross. The town needs to help you handle hold harmless because that's still a similar liability. And whether it's 12, 15, 17, the number changes slightly depending upon what you budget and what the state calculates as the requirement. That's still money we need to come up with at some point in time. Effectively, they're saying, oh, by the way, this is what you should be paying, period. And clearly, even if it's 12 million, that would be three overrides that all would have passed at four each. But we know that history doesn't necessarily work that way. So we'll put that aside. But that's OPEB. And then on to the revolving accounts, the historic perspective, which I was there back in 2007 when an unclean audit, management letter, significant audit finding, short story, there was a joint town and school committee meeting for a fiscal report out for a fiscal audit report. Forensic audit report. It had been the first time, and I think it's still technically the only time both school and town had a joint meeting for that type of a piece, a forensic audit report. The audit report was because of some bookkeeping. And as a result of that, two things happened. And that's really the key piece. One was the hiring of Miriam Goodman, who then brought in the rest of the financial structure around schools. So schools and town from, I think it's 15, 16, have had clean audits since then. Secondly, the policy that you have and have been quote, violating the last several years by using the revolving funds to pay for the current came out of the requirements of that fiscal report that says that was the contributor to the unclean audit, the finding, because somebody was making incorrect entries. And by at least having that 1 year's worth, you would tend to avoid that because, and the other reality is, and I think you even started getting to that. So if you did transportation and wiped it out completely, then if bills came due in September and you did not have the funds available, you would have to sit and wait to pay that bill until the student fees arrived to catch up to pay the bill that it was due, right? So at least by having the 1 year's worth available, you can pay bills in a timely fashion, in accurate fashion.
It's just good business sense.
Oh, for sure.
And and so yeah, I think it's just it, but I know if you look at it for first blush, and you're saying, like, well, hold on a second, why are we having to kind of worry about making, cuts for here to kind of pay, over there, or even about the override, when you look and you say, but there's so much money over here in these revolving accounts. Well, here's the reason and the rationale and why we're not kind of breaking every single piggy bank to exhaust it all, because it financially it just doesn't make sense. There's so we had great discussions, and hopefully we're going to more to come. As we kind of continue just to kind of educate everybody out there and make sure that we're all on the same page, as FY27 is not looking good.
No. And it's clearly an awareness opportunity once people fully understand. And the parallel, and I believe legally it is a direct parallel, and we'll be covering that because I am scheduled in January, February to have another conversation with Jonna and Kerry Bertone and our new budget director. He'll get introduced into the conversation to cover some of these issues because we had covered it prior, but people, especially with a whole bunch of newbies now involved and getting aware, the water, sewer, stormwater, and solid waste are all enterprise funds. They also have a minimum retention level, and it may be 1 million, maybe 1.5 million, depending upon the volume of the usage-based fees that go in from our water source, from our sewer. And then those funds can only be used for water and sewer expenses accordingly. So the peril is on the town side, and it just requires that awareness that, oh, by the way, this is not unique. This is government accounting in process on both sides.
Great points.
So more to come on that front. But in the meantime, we've got some happy holidays to have.
We do. And yeah, I hope Steve, I hope you and all the listeners just have a wonderful holiday season. And for all those kiddos, a great holiday winter break as well. I know my kids are itching and counting down the days.
Yes, counting down the days. T minus and counting. So stay warm in the meantime. I wouldn't mind, that little bit of the whiteness we had. That was pretty, but at least it
Yeah.
didn't hinder the driving too much or the shoveling for that matter. Well, thank you for doing this. And to the listeners, we thank you for listening. Stay tuned. There'll be more coming the next time. And we do this, of course, because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.